Yes, well, there was one gay bar called the A&B. The Arts and Battle Dress was its correct terminology. And that and some others in central London in the West End, rather tucked away unobtrusively.
Where was the A&B?
I forget the name of the street now.
What sort of area?
It was in the centre of the West End, right. In Theatreland.
Sort of Piccadilly, sort of?
Yes, near Leicester Square, I think. But I can't remember exactly.
Can you remember what it was like?
Oh, yes, it was a small place, and one had to go up a stairway to get to it. And it was usually quite crowded, and there was dancing going on. But in those days, I don't think their existence was all that well known to the general public. I think that the police were tolerant to a degree of these establishments, possibly because it gave an outlet that prevented gays being a nuisance elsewhere, if you see what I mean. That was my impression. Just as the cruising places, in particular Hampstead Heath, were very much used by gays and were what I would call lightly policed by the police. They would now and then go there with dogs and shoo people out, but generally speaking they left it alone. They could have cleared it out if they'd wanted to. So there was a bit of hypocrisy by the police, and it was my impression that life went on in the gay underworld largely because there was an unspoken tolerance of it.
Now, this would have been in the 50s?
Yes. I never completely left London because we did research based in London. But in 1960, I went to Cambridge. But I became familiar with the gay spots in London during the time that I was working here in hospitals.
What other spots were there apart from the A&B?
Well, there was a famous cinema near Victoria Station, which I've forgotten the name of. It's Biograph, that's right, which was very notorious. Places like that.
And would that?
And another place was.
What sort of films would that put on?
I don't think anybody watched the films.
Really?
More or less, yes.
So
the films were totally uninteresting, but it was, you went there for contacts. Groping went on constantly. The door of the toilet was constantly swinging open and shut. And there was even a distinct odour of the place. But eventually, of course, it was closed and now no longer exists. And another place that I discovered was the Speaker's Corner, Marble Arch, late in the evening. People would crowd round in a dense bunch and there would be groping and getting to.
Was that when the speaking was going on or just the area?
No, when the speaker was going on.
Really? I've
because
never heard
The speakers were rather wild by the time of the, you know, late on at night, 11, 12. And at that time, the crowd was relatively small and very dense and almost, I think pretty well entirely male. And that was another notorious place. But that, of course, no longer happens. So they were places that I heard about in London and actually used. The Walton Report, if I remember, was about 1956. Now, I should explain something else, and that is that when I was a student of medicine, I naturally took an interest in homosexuality and what was thought about it and what was written about it. And I became interested in reading about the causes of homosexuality and Freudian theory and all that sort of thing. And while I was a trainee psychiatrist in London, it so happened that I'd got the acquaintance of a publisher, actually Lord Horder, who was running the firm called Duckworth. And so I got the idea of writing a book about homosexuality with the idea of reviewing the literature of what was known about its causes and what gays were like and so forth. And I did indeed write a book called Homosexuality. And Duckworth published it just before the Wolfenden Report was published. And they arranged for it to be released through Penguin. So it had a wide circulation, and it was simply called Homosexuality. And there was only one other book at that time which was available for the general reader, which was what you might call a sort of objective survey, and that was Gordon Westwood's book. I think it was called A Minority. That was a pseudonym for Michael Scofield, who became, as you probably know, quite well known in as a supporter of legal decriminalisation, and who gave evidence to the Wolfenden Committee. I didn't give evidence to the Wolfenden Committee, but I know that the proofs of my book were sent to them.
And do you remember reading about or hearing about the Montague case?
Oh, yes. Of course, everybody read about it. I subsequently met the chap who was sent to prison. Suddenly the name escapes me.
Wildblood?
Peter Wildblood, yes. Because I was working at a psychotherapy clinic at the time, and the chief of the psychotherapy clinic was interested in the controversy about homosexuality and asked Peter Wildblood to come and give a talk to the staff. And that's how I met Peter.
And that was after he'd come out
That was after he'd come out of prison.
And what was your impression of him?
Oh, a very intelligent and interesting character. He was a very competent journalist. Well, I ought to explain that was thought since very extraordinary that a young psychiatrist should write a book pleading for tolerance and decriminalisation, since a large part of the medical profession were of the general opinion that homosexuality was a bad thing, that most homosexuals were psychologically disturbed, and were often bad characters. I mean, there were books written about the supposed characters of gay men. It was all about gay men in those days. Mm. And so the general view was very much officially anti-gay. And among the medical profession, it was thought to be a serious defect. And I was working in a hospital where there were these famous treatments of deconditioning of homosexuals, the electric shocks and drugs and things.
Was that at the Maudsley?
That was at the Maudsley, yes.
Tell me a little about that, if you wouldn't mind.
I don't think that I was not involved in the administration of those treatments, as it happened, although I might have been. I was working under a well-known forensic psychiatrist called Peter Scott, who certainly did prescribe hormone treatment for gay men, and was certainly not in favour of a gay lifestyle. And so it would have been quite impossible for me to say that I myself was gay. I had to pretend otherwise, and one pretended otherwise by simply not saying anything about it. And when remarks suggesting things against gays, you would say nothing about it. You would remain silent. And people would assume, or hopefully assume, that you were the same as them in their views. It was taking a risk to do what I did, to write a book. But of course the book had to be written in a very distant style, referring to them instead of we and that kind of thing. I was lucky that nobody actually exposed me. Otherwise, I doubt the book could have been published in the first place.